Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Evan Schwartzdriver. On today's show, the privacy of immigrants. Donald Trump has made a lot of headlines recently and caused a lot of concern with action on immigration, particularly focusing on rounding people up and sending them back to their home country. But what about the intangible effects of his stance on immigration? What about data and privacy? And how is the internet implicated in this crackdown on immigration? Joining me to discuss this is Nima Guliani, legislative counsel at the American Civil Liberties Union, better known as the ACLU, here in Washington, D.C. Nima, thanks for joining the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, of course, the ACLU has been in the news a lot lately. Your organization has been serving as a buffer to the crackdown on immigration, and people were either happy or not happy to see the ACLU sending lawyers to the airports during the big blow-up over immigration. But you're a tech policy person, and you're focusing a lot on the privacy of immigrants, not just whether they're allowed to stay in the country. And recently, an executive order has changed the way that the information about immigrants is used, handled, and stored. And even more recently, over this past weekend, memos were leaked indicating how the Trump administration plans to deal with this. So just to start out, before we dive into the weeds here, what is the Privacy Act?
So the Privacy Act is, an act that's quite old, but essentially what it does is for people who are citizens or green card holders, it gives them basic privacy protections. It puts in place limits on when the government can share their private information. It allows them to access records that the government may hold about them. And in the case where there are deficiencies or inaccuracy in those records, it allows them to actually, reach out to the government and request corrections. And as a matter of policy, since the 70s, many federal agencies have applied some of these protections to people who are not citizens and green card holders. And they've done this because it makes implementation of the Privacy Act easier. They've also done it to be consistent with many of their international obligations, because they find that, it makes other countries feel more comfortable to give the U.S. information if they know that the privacy rights of their citizens are going to be protected.
And it's interesting that you bring that up, because last year there was a law passed called the Judicial Redress Act, which was designed to extend Privacy Act protections in law to 26 or so countries that we deem as special enough to have this kind of protection, a lot of allies, a lot of European countries. And of course, that's been an ongoing concern in tech policy around how American tech companies are so popular around the world and people willingly give their data to American tech companies in exchange for services. Yet there's always that question of how is the U.S. government handling this information? Are we being spied on? And that makes our relationships with other countries more difficult. So now you have the Judicial Redress Act, which was certainly a step in the right direction in terms of assuaging the concerns. How does Trump's executive order change what we have under the Judicial Redress Act?
I think there's increasingly fear in the EU and in countries around the world that information of individuals who are not Americans that's stored in the U.S. is not going to be treated appropriately. And you've seen this play out in sort of the European court system. You have the court saying, in cases where, for example, companies like Facebook or Google store data about their customers in the U.S., that it has to be protected. And you also hear, I think, a little bit of nervousness on the part of EU lawmakers when it comes to sharing even law enforcement information. They want to make sure that simply because they're having these relationships with the U.S., that the rights of their citizens are protected, not just because it's good policy, but because it's required by the courts under the European Charter. And, as part of this a negotiation that the EU had with the U.S. over the sharing of law enforcement data, one of the things that was a precondition for that agreement going into effect was a law called the Judicial Redress Act. What the Judicial Redress Act did was extend certain Privacy Act protections to designated countries in the EU and to other countries who had information sharing agreements with the U.S. It was very much came as a result of international pressure, and the European Union made very clear that respect of privacy rights was essential for them to engage in this type of agreement with the U.S.
Yeah, and this was often referred to as a necessary but not sufficient thing, that yes, passing the Judicial Redress Act would be a step in the right direction toward repairing our relationship with Europe and other countries when it comes to privacy, but certainly not sufficient to do it all by itself. And now even this piecemeal reform is potentially going to be undermined by the administration. Now, getting to the human level, there are a lot of heartbreaking stories going around these days. And practically, what does the executive orders change? What do these changes to privacy mean for an immigrant? Maybe an immigrant who is in the middle of a removal proceeding and is trying to litigate their way out of being deported. How does this executive order about their information and their privacy impact that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the very real concerns is that this is going to have, you know, a devastating impact on some immigrants in the U.S., documented and undocumented. You know, a simple example is, let's say you're placed in deportation proceedings and you think that, you know, you have cause to remain in the country, or you think that, frankly, the government's just made an error. And if only you could access the record, that your immigration record, you could prove to a judge that you had the right to stay in the U.S. As a result of this executive order, there's now a giant question mark about whether you can even have that simple right, the simple right to have access to your record. Let's take another example. Let's say you're somebody who was brought here, human trafficked, undocumented. You were the victim of violence, sexual or otherwise. And as a result of that, you've applied for a T visa or a U visa. These are visas that are often given to victims of violence. Traditionally, these are populations that we all recognize need enhanced privacy protections. The last thing we want is information about these immigrants being distributed publicly or otherwise that makes them fearful in the future about coming forward and coming out of the shadows. We even have legislation on the books, the Violence Against Women Act, that provides extra confidentiality in certain cases when it comes to these individuals. For these individuals, do they now have to be more afraid that there are less restrictions on how their information can be shared either within the federal government or even from the federal government and at a state and local level? These are all giant question marks with the executive order in terms of how it will be implemented and what the effect will be. But there are, you know, people around the country who are very scared, and they have a right to be.
So at a basic level, the problem is that if there is information that could potentially allow someone to stay in the country, they're going to have a hard time getting that. To be fair to the administration, to try to see where they're coming from, we had an election. Clearly, Americans were upset about illegal immigration. Many of them voted for Donald Trump, and he's going to argue, and he's going to continue to argue, that he's just doing what he said he was going to do, which is crack down on illegal immigration. Now, they're also going to say that we're focusing on criminals, that law-abiding immigrants don't have much to worry about, that really this is about the 2 million or so, whether that's a legitimate number or not, I have no idea, 2 million or so criminal illegal aliens. So in terms of helping law enforcement deport those people and cracking down on criminals, does it not make sense that we're going to have more information sharing and that immigrant databases need to be accessed so that folks at ICE, the immigration enforcement, or local law enforcement can access that information and do their jobs? I mean, is there not a legitimate need for this change? And don't they need this information to be out there in order to do what they said to the voters that they were going to do?
There isn't the need for this change, even if you agreed with the approach taken by the Trump administration. I don't, but regardless of your point of view, this change is unnecessary. You know, a little history helps. These Privacy Act protections were adopted as a result of a recommendation from OMB in 1975.
That's the Office of Management and Budget?
Exactly, yeah. The Office of Management and Budget in 1975. They were put in place and followed by the Bush administration and the Obama administration. These are not political privacy protections. These are privacy protections that were adopted because they made practical and common sense, and they're good for the country. I mean, just look at it from an implementation standpoint. You know, a department that has, let's say, a database with 100 million records, not uncommon in today's world. Now imagine the amount of time it would take if you had to now have an individual who had to sift through that database. They had to go through the database and figure out, hey, does this record apply to someone who's a U.S. citizen or green card holder, or someone else who's not entitled to protections under this new rule? Are they from a country where we have entered into agreement that maybe means they get some of these protections but not all of these protections? From a pure implementation standpoint, the cost it would take to have someone go through every single record individually, figure out the appropriate privacy protection and apply it would be substantial. And the chance of errors is also substantial. I mean, we've seen in an immigration context cases where U.S. citizens have been detained because there was an error in a database. You can only imagine how those errors would be compounded and enlarged in a case where you're now forcing federal agencies to go back through previous records that could be decades old and now try to figure out what's the appropriate privacy protections that should be applied and how they should be handled.
And people do change their immigration status several times. I mean, you have cases where people come over on one visa, then end up staying on a different visa, or then they become citizens. And this information is changing fairly frequently. So does that add another layer of complication if the federal government is operating with outdated information? And you can imagine a worst case scenario where someone is actually legally have the right to be here, but the information is not consistent. I mean, is that a plausible scenario where the federal government is behind one step, where the person has done what they need to do, they have the right to stay, but because of a clerical error, they could get deported?
I mean, absolutely. We've seen, you know, past cases, you know, take an example where someone applies to on a fiance visa to enter the country lawfully. Their sponsor, you know, puts in place paperwork. At the time they make that application, under this new executive order provision, they don't have Privacy Act protections under the Privacy Act. But now let's assume that this person comes to the U.S., gets married to a U.S. citizen, over time becomes a green card holder and a U.S. citizen. Now, after they are a citizen and green card holder, under this new provision, all of a sudden they do have Privacy Act protections. Now what you're telling federal agencies is when you see this record, you've got to figure out not just what the status of the individual was at the time they made this application for a visa. You've also got to figure out, did they ever apply to become a green card holder? Did they ever apply to become a citizen? Are there other laws that might apply? I mean, just from a pure practical implementation standpoint, what you're creating is an administrative nightmare and burden for the civil society workers who are going to be asked to put this new policy in place.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, some of these concerns are there whether or not you agree with the Trump administration's approach to immigration. So you could make the argument that you can still do what he promised the voters to do without this Privacy Act piece. But there's also this fiscal responsibility angle, too. And I know a lot of times a conservative who's tough on immigration might not be sympathetic to the human element of the story, however unfortunate that might be. But this is going to be costly, as you've already laid out. There's global debates about data retention all over the place, and particularly in the private sector. There are private companies who don't want the government mandating that they hold data because it's expensive. The longer you hold the data, the more expensive it is. Companies regularly delete things. Cell phone providers like Verizon delete your text messages all the time. They don't want to keep all that stuff forever. It's expensive. And this is now a situation where a bunch of agencies are going to be retaining information. In particular, is there a concern for the DACA children, the Deferred Action for Children Arrivals? This was a very controversial policy under the Obama administration where children who came to the United States through no fault of their own, they're the children of illegal immigrants. They didn't exactly have a choice in the matter. And the idea was that we're not going to punish people who did not knowingly break the law because that's just inhumane. And they kind of had a safe haven to some extent under the Obama administration, although he was criticized for deportations a lot too. Is there an angle here for the Privacy Act that particularly affects them?
Possibly. I mean, the short answer is it's hard to know exactly how this is going to be implemented, but the fears are very real. There are databases, the DACA database, that has information about recipients of this program. Similarly, at the Department of Health and Human Services, there are databases that hold information about children who've arrived in the U.S., refugees, other populations, and other sensitive categories of immigrants. And the concern is that without these Privacy Act protections, it will be much easier for their information to be shared within the federal government, potentially for purposes of immigration or law enforcement, or really anything else. In the past, these databases, in many cases, would have had an extra layer of protection. The extra layer of protection would have required, you know, paperwork, documentation, a reason for agencies to access this sensitive information. And I think a good open question and a fair question is, will these databases, including the DACA database, have less protections? Will it be easier for immigration enforcement and law enforcement authorities to get that information, which could have very real effects on people's lives? I mean, those are addresses, potentially names of family members or employers. What does it mean for these individuals who may now be on the receiving end of not only an immigration apparatus that seemingly is attacking them, but also are on the receiving end of less privacy protections that allow them to protect themselves?
The issue of so-called sanctuary cities has come up in the news a lot recently. And while there's not a legal definition of what a sanctuary city is, the general definition is that it's cities where local law enforcement are not in the business of deporting people or necessarily reporting people to federal authorities. And there's a lot of reasons for this. One of them is that they don't want undocumented immigrants not reporting crimes to the police for fear that they themselves get deported. So there are a lot of cities that have decided that for public safety reasons and humanitarian reasons and whatever else, that they're not going to be in the business of helping the federal government enforce immigration. There are also cities that just don't do that in general. They don't necessarily declare themselves sanctuary cities. But in terms of just maybe some of these concerns remaining hypothetical, is it not standard for local law enforcement to not be doing immigration, even in maybe some cities in the South where people really want a lot of deportations happening? Can some of these DACA kids take comfort in knowing that the local law enforcement is not going to be getting involved? And even if Trump's executive order with the Privacy Act means more information sharing for local law enforcement, are they not going to do anything with it? I'm just trying to get to this idea that maybe the local law enforcement piece of this is not a concern, that it's just going to be the FBI, ICE, and other federal agencies that are the ones using the information that is disclosed by rolling back the Privacy Act. Or can you see a situation where local law enforcement is actually going to be using this information in a proactive way to deport people?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two concerns. One, even if you live in a so-called sanctuary city, there's no guarantee that ICE or other federal agencies are going to look for you and come after you.
Are not going to come after you.
And so I think that remains a concern. At an added level, if you look at the executive order in its totality, one thing is very clear, and that's that the administration intends to ramp up immigration enforcement at a state and local level. They talk about the 287G program, a program that has been largely discontinued, where essentially state and localities were deputized to become immigration enforcement agencies. And the intent is to once again expand that program, notwithstanding the fact that historically it led to abuses of rights of Americans and undocumented immigrants, racial profiling, you know, being sort of one of the things that it furthered and enhanced. There's also going to be a restoration of the Secure Communities program, one that was heavily criticized, where states and localities using biometric information, if they encounter someone, are able to sort of run that information through a database and identify whether the person could be undocumented. Through that program, there have been, you know, countless immigrants who've been detained and deported. There have also been U.S. citizens who've been improperly detained. So I think what we're seeing is a ramp up of state and local immigration enforcement in a way that's not only going to be costly for states and localities, but in a way that's really going to undermine, you know, fundamental rights for people. And so I don't know, it's cold comfort to say there are some sanctuary cities for individuals who are affected by these orders and are affected by these privacy changes. You know, sure, they may have the luxury of living in a locality that is taking steps to try to protect undocumented immigrants from these unprecedented attacks. But there's still, I think, a lot of leeway at a federal level and in other states and localities to take action that's going to have very real impacts.
So in terms of recommending alternatives, we always like to try to suggest something different than the policy that my guest is criticizing. So, of course, at the executive level, I assume your recommendation to President Trump would be to just not do this. But I think there's legitimate conversation these days about the role of Congress, especially when such a significant portion of the public is displeased with the person who occupies the White House. People are wondering where those checks and balances are. Sure, you had the Washington State play an important role in checking the executive order on immigration, but are there concrete proposals that Congress should be looking at that would represent better policies about how to handle the privacy of non-U.S. persons?
You know, absolutely. This, you know, part of the problem here is that these policies have existed at an executive agency level and that we've never really passed comprehensive legislation to address how we deal with the privacy of immigrants and how we deal with the privacy of foreigners whose information might be stored in the U.S. I mean, I would say first and foremost, the first thing the administration should do is revoke this policy. It is not an Obama policy. It is a, you know, pre-Obama policy that has been followed by Democratic and Republican administrations alike. And it's been done for good reason, and it's been done in part because doing it any other way would represent a logistical and implementation nightmare for federal agencies and would waste thousands, if not millions, of taxpayer dollars. Separate from that, though, I do think that we do need to very seriously think about applying certain Privacy Act protections to individuals who are not green card holders and citizens. I mean, imagine someone who's on a student visa in this country, who's on an H-1B visa, and so, you know, works in the U.S. and is here purely lawfully. There is a level of absurdity to the fact that that individual doesn't have the right to access their government records, doesn't feel confident that their private information won't be disseminated or made public, doesn't feel comfortable to think that they can go to the government and say, hey, what information you have on me is inaccurate and you should correct it. And so I think that there's a level of absurdity in that. And we also need to be cognizant of how these lack of Privacy Act protections undermine our international agreements and undermine U.S. businesses. If I'm a U.S. business and I service people around the world, I think what you're hearing from countries around the world is, hey, maybe we don't want to do business with American tech companies, for example, because we don't know that our citizens' data is going to be protected. And maybe we don't want to, you know, share information with the U.S. for national security or law enforcement or other purposes, because we don't know whether that information will then be disseminated and shared improperly and be used to violate the rights of our citizens. And those are legitimate concerns, and they're concerns that if the U.S. wants to maintain its international standing, wants to maintain the strength of its economy, wants to continue working with allies in the EU and elsewhere, those are problems that absolutely need to be addressed.
Yeah, reciprocity is the norm when we're dealing with the policy of immigration, and often countries treat others as poorly or as well as that country treats your people. So it's not like these things happen in a vacuum, and if the U.S. makes life more difficult for immigrants in the U.S., you would expect that other countries might make the lives of Americans living in those countries more difficult as well. Very practically, your organization is a resource in this. So how does someone who's concerned about their information, their immigration status, how they relate to the Privacy Act, how can they get help? How can they find out more about this?
I mean, to find out more about it, you know, www.aclu.org. We have a variety of information about the executive orders, not just the privacy provisions, but many other aspects of them that will affect people. But in terms of if this is something that bothers you or you want to be active on, you know, members of Congress need to have a fire lit under them. This is an issue where, regardless of your position on the immigration debate wholesale, should give you cause for concern. And it's one where members of Congress should be reaching out to the administration and pressing them to do changes. I think it's also important to note that, again, regardless of your stance on some of these immigration issues, any type of immigration enforcement activity or any other change in policy has to be consistent with the Constitution and with due process and, frankly, common sense. And what we're seeing is executive orders that are not consistent with any of these things, that are going to create a logistical nightmare for agencies, that are inhumane in the effect that they'll have on families and individuals who've lived in this country for years, and that aren't consistent with the protections that are required under the Constitution.
Yeah, it's not just about what would happen to those affected by the policy directly. If there's digital trade wars with Europe because we can't guarantee protection, and if other countries start cracking down on Americans, then of course that will impact everyone. So it's not just, you know, if you're a citizen, you can't just write this off and say, well, this is not my problem. I mean, it is everyone's problem. But we'll leave it there. And of course, if you are looking for more information, check out aclu.org. My guest has been Nima Guliani, Legislative Counsel at the American Civil Liberties Union. That's the ACLU here in Washington, D.C. Nima, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us an email at media@techfreedom.org. Find this podcast in the iTunes store. Please leave us a review. It will help others find the show. And if you have a story about how you've been impacted by the Privacy Act, I'd love to hear it. So send that to media@techfreedom.org. Thanks for listening.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.